Hello, everyone. My name is Andrew. And this is the Culips English Podcast. Hello, and welcome back to Chatterbox, the Culip series for intermediate to advanced English learners, which features natural conversations about fascinating topics. I'm your host, Andrew, and it's great to be here with you today. Guys, I have to say, I'm really excited for this episode. As some of you may know, I recently visited Australia. And while I was there, I was able to meet up with one of my friends who's living in Melbourne while he's completing his PhD. His name is Matthew. I call him Matt. And he's originally from the UK, but he lived for many years in Korea, and that's where we first met. In fact, we lived on the same street in Seoul, and we'd often run into each other while walking our dogs at the same time. And we were also part of the same poker game, and we met regularly with a few other guys to hang out, to eat some pizza, and play cards, play poker. Now, there's this idea that I've heard on many different podcasts and YouTube channels in the past, especially ones related to personal development and becoming a better person, or athlete, or business person. And that idea is that you are the average of the five people who you surround yourself with. Have you heard this idea before at all? After doing a bit of research, I learned that this idea was first put forward by a motivational speaker named Jim Rohn. And I guess what he's getting at here with this idea that you're the average of the five people who you spend the most time with is that if the people who you spend time with are positive, motivated, successful, well, then the qualities that they possess are likely to rub off on you too. And that will influence your own actions and perspectives in a similar way. However, on the other hand, if you spend time with people who have negative habits or bad attitudes, well then those habits and attitudes might influence you in a bad way. So at the end of the day, Jim Rohn is suggesting that you should choose your company wisely, as the people who you surround yourself with play a significant role in who you become as a person. So this is an interesting idea. What do you think about this idea? I'm not sure if I totally 100% agree with it or not, and perhaps in a future Chatterbox episode, we could talk about it in more detail. However, if it is true, then today's guest, Matt, is definitely one of the people I'd want to be in the group of five people who I surround myself with. He's just one of those guys that seems to be good at everything and is passionate about everything he does. Whenever we hang out, the positivity and excitement he gives off is infectious, and it rubs off on me and makes me want to put in more time, energy, and passion into the projects that I have going on in my life. So in our conversation, Matt and I talk about many different topics, ranging from Matt's childhood in England, trying to make it as an actor and writer, moving to Korea, living and studying in Australia, and his unique hobbies, which include dancing, gaming, and lifting. And for this episode, we have an interactive transcript and a helpful study guide available if you are a Culips member. In the study guide, you'll find vocabulary explanations and usage examples of some of the useful words and expressions that you'll hear Matt and I use in our conversation. There's also a quiz and prompts that you can use for speaking and writing practice. To get the guide, visit culips.com or just follow the link in the description for this episode to sign up and become a Culips member. When you become a Culips member, we'll also give you lots of other amazing benefits and bonuses like ad-free audio, invitations to our monthly live streams, exclusive access to our member-only series, The Fluency Files, plus you'll be able to join the member-only channel on our Discord server. Become a Culips member today and take a huge step forward towards improving your fluency and reaching your English goals. Okay, everyone, let's get to the conversation now. I hope you enjoy it, and please don't forget to leave a comment on our Discord once you finish listening. I'll be waiting to hear what you think. If you haven't already joined our Discord server, then the link is in the description, and you can follow it to join us on Discord. Okay, so here we go. Here's my conversation with Matthew Skidmore. Enjoy. Hello, Matt. Welcome to the QLoops English podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm honored to be on the podcast with you.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic. And I think you are going to make a wonderful guest. I was thinking about this a little bit earlier today because you have so many interesting stories and you're a natural behind the microphone. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And I guess where I wanted to start, Matt, is just at the beginning. It's a good place to start, right?
So absolutely.
Maybe if you wouldn't mind just giving a little self-introduction to our audience, just about who you are, what you do, where you're from, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I'm from a little town called Dudley, a very small, nondescript town right in the middle of England. Literally in the center of the country. It's kind of in between two big cities, Birmingham and Wolverhampton. And we're just like this little kind of boring town. Sorry, any Dudley people listening. It's not that great. Just a small town in between these cities.
I love the name of the town, Dudley. Do you know what the origin or why it's called Dudley? Is it like named after somebody?
Yeah, there was an Earl of Dudley. I don't know if he was named after the town or the town was named after him. But just down the road is a place called King Swinford. And that was named because that is where the king used to keep all his pigs. It was the King's Swine Ford.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, shortened to King Swinford over time.
How does it smell? I could imagine it probably wouldn't be like the cleanest of air there.
King Swinford is actually nice. It's way nicer than Dudley. Though, like, we are named after some important lord and they're named after a bunch of pigs, but their place is kind of better, frankly.
Cool. So what was it like growing up there?
I mean, I don't want to sound too rough on the place. It's not a great place to live these days. It's economically, it's a little bit depressed. Traditionally, it was one of the homes of the Industrial Revolution. So we had all of the coal mines and the steelworks and the glassmaking as well. But of course, over time, especially in like the 1980s, those kind of got closed down and it was like, we were going to open shops and shopping centers and stuff, which isn't very sustainable for the local area. So growing up it was kind of a little bit, here's a word that might be of interest to your listeners. It was a little bit parochial. It was very kind of small town minded. You know, everybody kind of looked inwards rather than looking outwards.
I see. And what was the population of Dudley, or what is it like roughly?
That's a good question. I have no idea what the answer to that question is. It feels like about 100 people, but there's thousands and thousands.
Thousands and thousands. Okay. So it's not like a tiny, tiny little place.
I'm making it sound a lot smaller than it is. It's actually a relatively big town, but it's certainly not city status.
Okay, cool. And I know a lot of our listeners are really interested in UK English and the various accents that can be found throughout the UK. How would you describe your accent?
I remember reading a book once and someone was describing the accent and they said it sounded like people chewing glass.
Well, that's a pretty harsh thing to say. I don't think that at all.
To be honest, as I get older, I appreciate it more. When I was younger, because I was used to listening to like American accents and like what we call received pronunciation English, which is like your BBC drama English. So our accent was very different and it sounded just like kind of weird to me. They call it a yam-yam accent.
Yam-yam.
Yam-yam. Because instead of saying words like you are, we say yam.
Oh, okay.
So instead of like you're a good friend, it'd be like yam a gooden.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That is like very, very different. I've never heard you say anything like that though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because of kind of me going through like drama school and then spending so much time in other countries, my accent kind of flattened out.
Okay.
If I've had a little bit too much to drink, occasionally you'll hear the Dudley come through.
And if you go back to your hometown and you hang out with some of your friends there, does it come out a little bit more as well?
Probably, yeah.
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 Interesting. Okay. Wow. I learned something new. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a few more questions about England and growing up in England before we move on to other things.
Sure.
I know that a lot of our listeners have actually told me that they've heard that England has a bad rep for food, and it's not like a praised cuisine from around the world. Do you think this is justified at all? And what are your favorite British foods?
My favorite British foods. Okay, so you have to think about the history of England. Mm-hmm. We don't have the best history when it comes to other countries. Mm. All right, we were expansionist. We kind of did as much as we could to take over as much of the world as we could. That's terrible. We did horrible things around the world. But what it does mean is we brought back some incredible food. Mm-hmm. So the best British food is actually food from other countries. Easily, 100% for sure. I think our national dish, I think the most common dish that we eat is chicken tikka masala.
Really?
Which is, of course, an Indian dish.
Yeah.
England food, English traditional food is still pretty good. It's like potatoes and meat and vegetables. So you can't really go wrong there, you know?
Yeah, classic.
As for like my best, my favorite, I think not because of like the taste or anything, just because it makes me feel like I'm kind of young again and back in England. It has that like nostalgia about it, is going to be fish and chips. Fish, chips, and a pot of curry sauce on the side. Mm-hmm. So unhealthy. Probably doesn't taste as great as I remember it, but still it holds that special place for me.
The nostalgia factor.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting that you eat it with curry on the side. I've only tried it with tartar sauce on the side.
No, if you go to an English fish and chip shop, fish, chips, and curry sauce, or if you're feeling a little bit fruity, I'm going to have some mashed peas, mushy peas instead.
Okay, good to know. And it's funny that you said that the best British food is food from other countries, because that's my answer when people ask me similar questions about Canada as well. It's like, Canadian food? No, not so great, not really famous, but we have good food from other countries.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm a music guy, Matt, and I know you're a music fan as well. And thinking about like rock and roll in the UK is just like, wow, there's so many good bands, right? What are some of your favorite bands from your country?
I mean, that's a really, really tough one. I try to be kind of as eclectic as I can be with music. So I try and listen to a bunch of music from all over the place. When I grew up, I was super into like indie and rock. And then I kind of grew into like a little bit of hip hop and stuff as well. So we're like, as I was growing up, the indie scene was really big for me. Bands like, probably bands people have never heard of at this point, because they were like popular when I was younger. Bands like Supergrass.
Oh yeah, I know Supergrass.
Oh, really? Yeah. Fantastic. Supergrass and like Blur.
Yeah.
And Jarvis Cocker and Pulp. Like that kind of scene was really big for me. But as I've kind of grown older, like now I think bands like the Arctic Monkeys have taken that kind of, that role of being like the foremost indie band from England. But we do have a great musical tradition of really getting some great music out there. I actually heard a really great explanation for that.
Okay.
Someone once told me that the reason England produces so much good music is because the weather's so bad, everybody stays home and practices playing the guitar.
There might be something to that.
Right.
There might be something to that. Definitely, I think the UK in general just punches above its weight when it comes to music. If you think of, you know, the population compared to how many just amazing acts have come out of the country, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like, of course, I listen to more English music than I would, you know, German music or something, but
yeah,
I think that still the UK is a powerhouse for music creation. It's really cool.
I think you're right. But I do think in the modern age with the internet, I kind of sound so old now. Okay. In this newfangled internet, with the internet and stuff, we do have a lot more access, and a lot of people have a lot more access to creating new music, which is fantastic. So I try and grab as much from different places and different genres as I can these days.
Who's your choice in the great Britpop battle, Blur or Oasis?
when I was a kid, it was Oasis. Like, I was really, I just kind of hit my super, like, hormonal rebellious stage. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to be rock and roll. And then as I got older, I was like, actually, that wasn't that great. So Blur were really innovative and they played really good music. So in retrospect, Blur, but at the time it was Oasis.
Nice. Yeah, I think I would agree with you on that one. Although I liked the attitude Oasis had, you know, that super rock and roll attitude was pretty impressive.
Yeah. And I have to say, I thank Oasis for getting me into earlier music like the Beatles and David Bowie and stuff.
Sure.
Their influence led me to like appreciate more the history of music.
Right. Nice. So you mentioned just a moment ago that you were in drama school, acting school. And that's one of the reasons why you don't have such a strong Dudley accent anymore.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't know that about you. Could you tell us a little bit about acting and your involvement with that activity?
Sure. So that was my undergrad. My undergrad degree was in theater acting, drama. About 10 years, I was a theater actor and writer. Never like super big. I played a couple of like big stages, but nothing like show-stopping. But I was involved in a lot of Shakespeare plays. I wrote a couple of things that were performed. It was pretty much my life for about 10 years in Birmingham and in Liverpool, where I went to university. Various kind of plays and stage poetry and that kind of thing as well. Yeah.
Wow. So do you have a role that was like your most memorable? Did you ever play Hamlet or... you know, some character that a lot of people would know?
Richard II was probably my favorite.
Okay.
I did a couple of like really interesting, actually maybe probably the most memorable, Richard II is probably my favorite. The most memorable, we did a cross-gender version of The Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, okay.
If anybody knows Shakespeare, I played Kate, who is the shrew in that. Mm-hmm. And that was actually incredible. It was really fun to do. We played it like a black comedy, but it's actually a really tragic story. It's a comedy. It's a Shakespearean comedy. We played it as a kind of black comedy with this really tragic ending. It was really good. It was really well received as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when I finished my undergrad, I tried to make it as a musician for a couple of years. That was my goal, to be a rock star.
I didn't know this about you either.
Yeah.
Wow, we're getting to know each other after several years now, Andy.
Did you have the same ambition in your life? Did you try to make it as a professional actor after graduating? Was that your thing as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So once I graduated, I was acting and writing for a good probably 5 years. But as you probably know, anybody who works in the arts means you're poor pretty much all the time. Lots of work, but no money. So sleeping on my friends' sofas, you know, trying to work part-time in a bar and trying to do full-time acting as well. Not the most conducive to a comfortable lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But that's when I got kind of an invitation to come out to Korea. Just so it's like, oh, yeah, sure. I've never been to Asia. You know, I'm from Dudley. Nobody goes anywhere if you're from Dudley. You go to like the hot parts of Europe for a week and then come home. That's kind of the extent of it.
Sure.
So it sounds like a really interesting, exciting thing. And then I moved to Korea. And of course, after that, I've never acted since.
Well, this is a good time to transition into that part of your life then and to talk a little bit more about your experience in Korea. That's where we met each other for the first time. So you were there for a long time, right? Wasn't it almost 15 years or so?
Yeah, about 15 years, yeah. 2008, I moved out there, yeah.
2008. And were you there continuously that whole time, or did you go back and forth a little bit?
So after, I think I did 2 years, and then I went back to the UK for 6 months, and then I went back to Korea, which is kind of a common story, I think, with a lot of people who lived in Korea. They kind of live in Korea for a little bit. They go home and be like, actually, Korea was really fun. I really enjoyed it. And go back over there. That was what I did. It's kind of great the second time around because after the first like year or two, I found it's very surface level. It's like, oh, I'm having a great time meeting all these people. But then you kind of go home like, oh, that was great. I'm going to go back again. But then when you go back the second time, you're like, okay, now I'm actually invested in the place. it's less about kind of going out and partying. It's more about kind of getting to know the place itself and the people and the culture and the history. So that was a much more worthwhile experience, I think.
Okay. And you lived in Seoul that entire time, or were you in different parts of the country?
No. So when I first moved to Korea, I was in a small city actually called Gumi.
Gumi, okay.
Which is in Gyeongsangbuk-do, close to Daegu. Mm-hmm. I was there for 2 years. Then I moved to Songnam, where I was there for another 2 years. And then I moved into Seoul to do my master's degree.
Okay. So all over the country, you know, all roads lead to Seoul eventually, I think. Everybody wants to get there.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely true. Seoul is very different to the rest of the country, I think.
Yeah, it's a special place.
It is.
What were some of the difficulties that you had when you moved to Korea for the first time, adjusting to a totally new culture, a new language, a new cuisine, all of these things? Do you remember any of those difficulties?
Well, so when I moved to Korea for the first time, I was vegetarian.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'd been a vegetarian for about 5 years. And then I think within the first week of being in Korea, I was like, this isn't going to work.
It's a tough place to be a vegetarian.
It is, especially when you walk past the meat restaurants and you realize the smell of the barbecue is just so insanely attractive. You're just like, oh, can I really keep being a vegetarian? So a little bit of context. I was vegetarian like partially for the moral reasons and partially for the health reasons, but mostly because when I was in university, somebody made a bet with me that I couldn't be vegetarian. So I was like, forget this, I'm going to be vegetarian. And it was for no particular reason. I was just young and stupid.
Just stubborn.
Yeah, basically. So when I got to Korea, I was like, well, I don't need to be stubborn anymore. I'm going to eat this meat.
You went over to the meat side.
I did. Although I have to say, in respect where it's due, I think a lot more vegetarian-friendly places are opening in Seoul particularly.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So you spent 15 years in Korea. What are like a couple of the very good memories that you have from your time there?
So many. And it's really weird because I spent so long there and so many of my kind of formative and important years of my life there. Now, if I get homesick, I get homesick for Seoul rather than I do for England.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So like being able to just try to pick a couple out is almost impossible because I've had most of my good times, most of my bad times, and most of my indifferent times have been in that place, you know. I think rather than like picking out just a couple of memories, it's more thinking about the things that mean a lot to me, like the relationships that I built there, my feelings towards, you know, the landscape and the culture and all of that. It all kind of stays with you, I think.
Have you ever calculated the time you actually lived in England versus the time you've lived abroad? Like I was calculating that for my life now. And I thought, well, if I live in Korea for not too many more years, then I'm going to spend more than half of my life abroad versus the time that I actually spent in Canada. Have you done that calculation? Have you crunched that number yet?
It's actually not that difficult to do because I left England when I was 26. So yeah, I'm still like 10 years more in the UK. I don't see that number going up anymore, to be honest. So it's not about 10 years later, it's going to be 50-50. And it's probably going to be mostly abroad at that point.
It's interesting. Time flies.
Yeah, doesn't it? How about you? What's yours number then?
Well, I went back and forth between Korea and Canada for so long. But in total, I've been in Korea coming up, I think, around 13 years. I got another 8 to 10 years to do somewhere in there. But yeah, as long as things continue the way they do and I keep living in Korea, then eventually I'll hit that point. Eventually I will have lived longer abroad than Canada. Unless we go back to Canada, like who knows what the future will hold, but it was just something I was thinking about the other day.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, Andrew. I'm going to turn the tables on you now.
Go for it.
If you were to leave Korea, where is a place that you'd want to go? We're talking not just like a vacation or like an extended time, but like to live.
If we're throwing out the realities of the country aside, like finding work and speaking the language, that kind of thing, my wife and I visited Helsinki, Finland, a few years ago, and we really liked it there. We're only there for 3 days. And you know, sometimes when you visit a new place, you have the rose-colored glasses on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is so amazing. Like, wouldn't it be amazing to live here? Maybe that was happening to an extent, but we were both like, oh, this country, this city seems amazing. So Helsinki would be one. And right now, Matt, we are both in Australia.
We are.
And my wife and I have been here for 2 weeks, just over 2 weeks now. And, you know, at first I thought I got those rose colored glasses on again because this country seems really, really sweet. And we both really enjoy it here. But it's been, you know, over 2 weeks now. And I'm still thinking the same way. Those rose colored glasses haven't fogged up or anything yet. So
excellent.
So I'm thinking, yeah, maybe Australia. Who knows? A strong contender for sure.
Fantastic. Well, if you do make that leap, I'll probably still be here. So we can do this again sometime.
Well, let's get into that a little bit then, because eventually, after a long stint in Korea, you did leave. And now you're mm-hmm. here living in Melbourne. And
yep.
Yeah, we were able to meet up the other day and catch up and hang out. And that was so fun.
It was great.
What about your experience here? Maybe you could tell us first, like, why you decided to come here and what you're doing here.
Yeah, so I kind of got to a point in my work life where I kind of hit a wall. Mm. I think there was not much more that I could do, particularly as a foreigner. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, I've always wanted to do a PhD. Mm-hmm. It was something that had been on my mind since I'd finished my master's degree, really. Mostly because I just want my niece and nephew to have to call me Dr. Matt. So I was like, right, this is probably about time. So I was looking at different universities to go to. I originally thought about going back to the UK just because, you know, my family's still there. Mm-hmm. And I got accepted into a couple of really good ones, actually. But then somebody who had a friend of mine, a Korean friend who had just come back from Australia, said, have you thought about Australia? I hadn't thought about it at all.
Okay.
So I had a look and it turns out Australia has some of the best universities in the world.
Nice.
Who knew? Yeah. So yeah. Sent across my research proposal, got in touch with my current supervisor. They offered me a scholarship and I was like, yes, this is great. Looked at my offers from the UK and they said because I'd been out of the country for so long mm-hmm. that I was now going to be treated as an international student.
Really?
I would have to pay three times the fees of like a domestic student.
Oh, come on.
So this other country has given me a scholarship to come here. My home country, in quotation marks, want to charge me three times the normal price. So I think I'll probably go to Australia.
Yeah, and I think you made a good choice. Like I said, it's a really awesome place here. What are you studying? I know you've pivoted away from acting now. Could you tell our listeners what you're doing your PhD in and what you're researching?
Sure. So it's very broadly speaking, it's kind of sociolinguistics.
Okay.
So it's looking at language use among 1.5 and second generation immigrants to Australia. Mm. I'm sure many of your listeners will be aware that Australia is kind of famous for its immigration policies. It's quite a welcoming country. Mm-hmm. So there is quite a large influx of people from all over the world here. So I'm looking at how the children of the immigrants kind of navigate their cultural identity through language and different semiotic resources. So, you know, how do they express themselves as someone from their like parents' country and someone from Australia at the same time? And how does that kind of change depending on what spaces they're in and what artifacts they're using and what language they're talking, that kind of thing.
Interesting. What does it mean if you're a 1.5 immigrant? Does that mean like you were born in a different country and you immigrated as a child?
That is exactly right. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody asked me that. You're the first person to also offer an answer. Thank you. Well done. I mean, technically, there are different definitions of it. I'm going by the definition of if you arrived here before you're 12 years old.
Okay.
So that means you have also extensive schooling in Australia as well, which has a big impact on your kind of how you construct your identity.
And have you thought about what you're going to write as a thesis or your doctorate dissertation? Have you decided on that yet?
Yeah, pretty much. I think so.
Yeah, nice.
So I'm at the stage now. This is my second year. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of writing up the methodology and stuff. But this is the year where I get into the big data stuff. So I'll get my participants. We'll do a lot of work together. We get data. We'll look at it together. And then I'll start analyzing stuff. And then next year is when, yeah, I write the whole thing.
Nice. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
It's so cool that you just went for it. You said you always wanted to do the PhD and then you made it happen. And I know that's not an easy thing. Like, you were out of academia for how many years before you decided to go back?
Not that long, actually. I finished my master's degree, I think about 5 years before I started the PhD.
Okay.
So it took quite a while to do my master's degree as well. And I do recommend this to anybody. It's like, don't do any higher education unless you're sure you want to do it. So many people drop out of PhDs, particularly because it's so much intense work. Mm-hmm. If it's not something that you're passionate about, it's going to really have that kind of mental strain on you. I'm used to always being somewhat poor, so it's okay if I lose a bit of money. And because I really am interested in the subject, it's a lot easier to commit myself to the work. And I think that's a kind of perspective I couldn't have had if I'd have just jumped straight from my, you know, undergrad to master's to PhD. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad I took the time to, you know, experience life and figure out what it is that I wanted.
Yeah, for sure. That's the way to do it, I think. So Matt, we're going to wrap things up here very quickly because we're hitting our time limit. But before I let you go, I have to ask you about your hobbies because you've got some hobbies that are, to me, really unique, I think, because they're so different from my own hobbies. But yeah, they're really, really interesting. And I love it when you talk about them because it's an insight into a world that I know really nothing about for all of your hobbies. So I know that you are into dancing. You're also into D&D.
Yep.
And any other games or just D&D?
Well, it's kind of tabletop role play generally. D&D is the main game that we play. Although I'm currently running, if you know, the Alien franchise.
The movies?
Yeah, the movies. I'm currently running a short 3-session game on the Alien franchise as well, which is pretty fun.
Cool. So tabletop gaming and also exercising, like working out. I also like exercising, but I run and you hit the gym. So it's like totally two different styles.
Very, very different. You run an insane amount that would kill me.
It's something we always joke about, right? Because I say the same thing, like with you doing weightlifting or pull-ups, that kind of thing. I'm like, how can you do so many pull-ups? I can only do 3. So that's always funny. But why don't we talk about those hobbies really quickly? What about dancing? What style of dancing are you into?
Yeah, so I do Latin dance, particularly a dance called bachata. Not as famous as salsa. Salsa is obviously the one everybody kind of knows, but the kind of second most popular one, or famous one, is bachata. Super popular these days, pretty much everywhere. One of the really, really great things about learning to dance is whenever I travel, whatever city I go to, there's always a Latin dance club where people who dance go. I could always meet somebody, have a drink, go dancing, and like have a great time thanks to this this really cool hobby that I've got.
That's one question that I get a lot here at the podcast is from people who have moved to an English-speaking country and they're having some problems like getting to know people or to meet new friends or to find English speakers to interact with. Like they can find people from their own country to hang out with, but to try and hang out with, you know, English speakers can be a little intimidating. But I was thinking, like, this is the perfect hobby for doing that kind of thing, right?
It absolutely is. Well, I would say, so my hobbies are pretty good for me because there's kind of 3 styles. It's like the working out, which is just me in the gym, my alone time. I've got a podcast on and I'm kind of lifting those weights and, you know, making myself better and just focusing myself. Then there's D&D. Or any kind of tabletop role-playing game. I think any kind of small group hobby where you meet the same people week in, week out, you get to build those bonds with the same people, those kind of close friendships.
Sure.
Like some of my best friends in Korea and some of my best friends here in Melbourne are from the D&D table that I kind of come with.
Okay.
And then you've got dance. And dance is great for just meeting a huge variety of people. Like every week I'm meeting new people. I get to kind of occasionally see the same people and be like, oh, hey, do you want to dance? Oh, awesome. Oh, what's your name? But it's very kind of short, like atoms colliding for a few moments kind of social interaction. But it's still really great for getting that kind of social practice, I guess, just constantly meeting people, you know, saying hello, getting to know a little bit about them, just saying hi and then dancing. And then a couple of weeks later, you bump into them again. So I think I've got the kind of three spheres of social interaction in my hobbies, which is really good for me.
You've got it all figured out. The secret right here.
There you go, folks. You heard it right here.
Matt's
most
secret.
People would put that in a book and sell it, but no, you get it for free on Qlips.
Quickly, I just wanted to ask you how you got into dancing, because that seems like something that is a little bit difficult to pick up. How did that start?
I went to my friend's birthday party, and my friend was a dancer, and he invited a bunch of dancers, and I saw them, and I was like, I want to know how to do that. That looks amazing. It looks so incredible. And the fact that it was all improvised, And when I was watching it, it looked like so smooth and so wonderful, so beautiful, so graceful. I was like, but that's improvised between two people. Blew my mind. So like a couple of weeks later, I found a class. It sucked at it so bad. And if you start it, you will suck so bad. But if you keep going at it, you'll be with other people who suck, and people who suck a little bit less, and you'll learn from them. And people who are pretty good, you'll learn from them. And over time, you'll get really good at it. And then you'll be the kind of person that other people look at and go like, wow, that's so cool.
And you're one of those people now, right? Like, as far as I know, you've won some awards or traveled to different places to participate in different... It wouldn't be like a tournament. What do you call it? An event?
Competitions and stuff. I don't want to blow my own trumpet too much, right? There are professional dancers out there who spend all of their time dancing, traveling the world. I am not one of those people. It's a fun hobby for me.
Okay.
I've won a couple of competitions, just small scale competitions, and I have traveled a little bit with it. I'm lucky that it's allowed me to do that. I've got a couple of things coming up this year. I've got, I'm going to Adelaide and Brisbane.
Wow.
And hopefully over to Jeju at some point as well for the festival there.
Because
there are like huge festivals where you get to meet people from all over the world who come together to take classes and dance together.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Matt, thank you so much for this interview. That was amazing. You're a natural behind the mic, just like I anticipated. And I think our audience is really going to enjoy listening to all the stories that you shared with us here today. So thanks so much. And we'll have to get you back on again in the future.
It has absolutely been my pleasure, Andrew. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I would love to come back on anytime.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Cheers, babe. Take care.
So that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening, everyone, and great job today. You put in some time and effort to improve your English, and I think that's just so awesome. I'm proud of you for that, and you should be too, because this is exactly what you need to keep doing to get closer to achieving your goals with the English language. I'm curious about what you thought about this episode. Please leave any comments or feedback that you might have on our Discord server. And if you enjoy Qlips, please support us. The best way to support us is by becoming a Qlips member. You can also tell your friends who are learning English to check us out. Leave a positive review and a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Instagram and subscribe to our YouTube channel, or, of course, by joining us on the Qlips Discord server. I'm going to take off now. Please take care, and I'll talk to you next time when I'm back with another brand new episode. Bye-bye.